I'm Daisy, I'm an addict.
Oh, hi, Daisy.
Oh, this meeting is so big and hot. It's the biggest meeting I've ever been to, actually. And I'm nervous. My heart's racing. But as I was sitting here and the readings are going on, it's like I just have my experience. And you're all just addicts like me. I don't know why it's so scary. But in a funny sort of way, as nervous as I am doing this, this is very out of my comfort zone to sit in front of a room full of people and talk about myself. It is a gift. It's a gift that I'm sitting here and that I have a message of recovery to share, that I'm clean today. It was strange on the way up here. I used to come here, Trafalgar Square and St. Martin in the Fields, and I lived in King's Cross, and I was always on my own. And I went to a clinic on Dean Street and a needle exchange. And this area for me is full of memories of my using and full of darkness. And it's really sad and it's really lonely. And it's uncomfortable remembering that and reflecting on that. But it's also absolutely amazing that I come here today because I'm clean in recovery and I'm doing this. And I guess that's all I can really share. It's, I never imagined that I would get clean. I never imagined when I was in these places that that my life would ever change. I picked up really young, I was 12, and my using progressed really, really quickly. I'd say things happened in my life to accelerate that process. And by the time I was 16, I was dependent physically on Class A's, which pretty much ruled my life for a decade. But I don't believe that the things that happened make me an addict. I was already on that path. And quite young, I couldn't really see myself living without using. I didn't know how to function. I didn't know how to be part of the world. It's I hear it said a lot in meetings. I hear people talk about it a lot, this sense of like not having a map for life, not having a blueprint for how to live. And I just felt really out of place and really strange, even in my own family, disconnected. And people that I loved so much and I knew that loved me, and I just felt this distance between me and them. There was always this space, this uncomfortable feeling, self-consciousness. And using kind of helped that for a while, but it became everything. I became it, I suppose. And a lot of my life, I was defined by my addiction and I lived for my addiction. I lived to use and used to live. It was like my raison d'etre. I didn't have anything else. You know, I woke up usually about 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, and my whole purpose was I'm gonna go and graft and I'm gonna make money to use from the age of around 16. I didn't know how people do normal jobs. I would try and work in cafes, bars, restaurants. I lived with all sorts of people all over London from a really young age, you know, with this air of like, I'm independent, I can do things on my own, I'm really young and I live in a squat or I live here or I live, you know, like, I, even to myself, it was this pretense of like, I'm all right. And I'm just not conforming to society, but I was really quite fucked. And and it wasn't very cool. That's the reality. I could make it look cool on the outside if you saw me briefly, you know, to my family, for example. I could kind of make my life sound interesting for a few years until everyone saw there's no substance to it. And I was living through other people. You know, I was always following other people and what they were doing, and didn't really have anything of my own. And yeah, that ended. The going to gigs and sort of that stuff just went, and it got progressively darker and more lonely, and I wound up in lots of services and on scripts. And I was introduced to NA 10 years ago and I didn't get it. I was really young and really naive and really in a lot of denial. You know, I thought I could control it. I guess that's part of being an addict. I was so in my addiction and I didn't want to stop using, but it took me a long time coming to meetings. It took a lot of overdoses. It took a lot of really horrible stuff to happen and things to get really bad before my final overdose wound up in a detox and started coming to meetings. And I was coming to meetings every day for 2 years on a script, on and off a script, struggling, picking up, but I consistently had a sponsor and I started to build relationships with people. And that feeling, even like with my family, with people that I loved, that I didn't belong and that I didn't fit in, that I didn't connect, just started to dissipate. And it was really slow. I didn't come in and trust people. I didn't come in and get this process. I didn't come in and think this will work for me. I was terrified, you know, having finished school at 15, who is ever going to employ me? What am I going to do? I've got nothing on paper, like just this gripped with fear. But I consistently came back, and it's, you know, I can see now that it was people's belief in me and people's love for me, and that, yeah, their belief I would get clean, I'd make it. Eventually I did, and I really surrendered, and it was such a beautiful moment. My life changed so dramatically in that moment. I was sitting in Bushy Park and I looked up at the sky. Nothing in particular had happened. I just looked up at the sky and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I've lived for so long trapped by scripts and services and in a way been defined by that. You know, my identity was quite wrapped up in that. And what I had this little tiny seed of belief, like I can be something more than this. I can do something. And that day I stopped taking my script and I haven't used since. That was 18 and a half months ago. Wow. Thank you. and it is like, here, when I think about the stuff that I do today in my life today, it is really hard for me to believe that it's my life. On a daily basis, I struggle to believe that the life I have is my own. Everything changed almost overnight. I stopped going to services and picked up my step work immediately. And I worked really hard at it. I wanted to do it. I saw people come to meetings and change and grow around me. And I was staying stuck, you know, not moving forward. So I was so hungry for it. And yeah, things just changed rapidly, not just in my external sort of material, obvious sort of way of life. Like I stopped being in withdrawal. I started to sleep. I started to look after myself and eat regularly. I got a job at 90 days clean, which I still have today. You know, it's not just in these external ways. The way that I started to see myself, you know, coming out of that, it's like I started to believe in myself. I'm more than an addict. I'm Daisy. You know, I'm a person, I'm a young woman, and I deserve to be here. That was like the beginning of my recovery. And as I started to believe that, it's not like I'm in a consistent place of self-belief and I'm feeling comfortable in my skin, not at all. But that crippling sense of like just not wanting to be here, you know, not deserving to be here went. My relationships with my family and friends strengthened because I was present. I was just much more present. I'm here. And yeah, in the last 18 and a half months, I've traveled extensively. I've been so many places in the world. And recently I was in Indonesia. I've also, both my parents are addicts and my mum's in recovery. My relationship with my mum has developed so much because we share this common bond, and it's not like we talk about being in recovery that much. It's that I understand her in a completely different way. I view her now as a woman that I really respect and as a woman that I love, not as just my mum, you know, that was pretty screwed up when I was younger. Being in recovery has really shifted my perspective of how I see myself in my relationships and how I view other people. And yeah, it's kind of like subtly flows through all my relationships and the way that I connect with people, the way that I'm learning to be vulnerable with people and open. And I went to Indonesia with one of my best friends in recovery, and it was incredible. I did things I never imagined that I would do, and I said it once before in a chair. When I went into detox, I weighed 7.5 stone. I was struggling to walk properly when I was withdrawing. I looked horrendous. My hair was really thin and sort of falling out. I was covered in scabs and just, yeah, I was really, really ill. You know, I was really broken. And when I was a year clean, yeah, it would have been around 14 months clean. I went to Indonesia. And one of the things we did while we were there was climb a mountain, which is 3,500 meters high. It took 3 days. And climbing at altitude in freezing cold conditions. And I did that. And about 3,200 meters up, I had altitude sickness and I was freezing cold. I couldn't see properly. I had my head between my knees. I felt really violently ill and I didn't think I was going to be able to walk. Like, I wanted a helicopter to come and get me. I really didn't think I was going to make it. And my best friend crouched down in front of me and she was looking at me and I was crying and she held my face and she was like, Daisy, we can do this. We can do this. And I looked at her and she just kept saying, we can do this. We can do this together. She held my hand and we did it. You know, I was able to get up. It was my, I looked at her and I believed her. I believed that we could do it. And I guess that's like my whole journey of recovery. It's putting my faith and trust in something that's not me. Mm-hmm. And that's my higher power. That's my God, in those connections with people, in life, in confronting my fear, in accepting my flaws and my humanness. And, you know, my legs just weren't working. Like, I didn't think I was going to make it. And on my own, I wouldn't have got up there. But together, we did, and it was one of the best feelings in my whole life to be at the summit, watching the sun come up. It was really beautiful, and I've done a lot in recovery. And actually, on Wednesday, I'm going to Australia for 3 months on my own, and I'm going to go and see my dad and family members. I've seen my dad once in 13 years. And because I'm here and I'm in recovery and I'm free of the chains of addiction, but not only am I free, I have compassion and empathy and understanding for another addict, whether they're my dad or not. You know, this man needs love and understanding and forgiveness in the same way that I need to be forgiven for all the shit that I've done. And that's what this stuff gives me. You know, it just, a different way of looking at things and a different way of living my life, which is such a gift. So I'm not really sure I can say anything else. My time's probably up, but thank you for having me. And I'll leave it there.